is gonna keep. Oh yeah, alright. Take it easy, baby, make it last all night. She was an American girl.
This is Deborah Craddock, a podcast where we sit down with everyday Americans and hear their extraordinary stories. I'm your host, Deborah Drucker. Come along with me as we discuss those things that we were always told not to talk about. Politics, religion, and more. I promise you'll be inspired and have your mind opened by the end of this episode.
Well, it was kind of cold that night. She stood alone on the balcony. Yeah, she could hear the cars roll by out on 441, like waves crashing on the beach.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Deborah Craddock. On today's episode, we're doing something a little different. For two seasons, you've been hearing me interview all kinds of guests. I've been asking them about their lives, their values, their beliefs, everything. And maybe you've been wondering, who is this lady asking all these questions? What's her story? So today on Deborah Craddock, we are flipping the microphones. Rachel Cooks, who was such a great guest on an earlier episode, is here with us again. And this time, she's going to be asking me the questions. So, Rachel Cooks, welcome to Deborah Craddock.
That's right, Deborah. Welcome to Deborah Craddock. Deborah is a dynamic, empathetic person, a mother, a fashion designer, a humanitarian, a big mouth activist, a podcaster, and wife to a legendary upright bassist. Let's find out how Deborah became the righteous babe that she is sitting with us here today. So where are you from originally?
Well, I'm a Laguna Beach native now. I've been here for 33 years. I do split my time between Laguna and New York, but originally I was born on an Air Force base in Mount Clemens, Michigan. I think I spent the first maybe year of my life there with my mom and dad. And then my dad was transferred to California. My recollection of my first home was in La Puente, California. My mom was this very cute, very dynamic, very charismatic young woman, very ambitious. I'm first generation American. So she married the American soldier, you know, the American good-looking Air Force man.
Where did she come from?
Well, he was stationed in Casablanca, which is in Morocco. And he met this cutie and he fell for her and her family adored him. He was the American, you know, military, handsome, movie star, good looks man who brought them Coca-Cola and candy bars and cigarettes and all these American things that were hot properties of the day, which, you know, now we know are terrible for us.
In Morocco.
In Morocco. And so they met and her family adored him. And actually, my older sister was conceived and born in Casablanca. So I am the first generation from my mom's line to have been born in America. From my biological father, I think it was many, many, many generations back.
Okay. So California, since you can remember, when did New York come into play?
New York was a city that my adopted father, Severin, my stepdad, who later adopted me, took me to when I was 11 years old. And I just saw so much energy and life and color and lights and people and excitement that I fell in love with New York. And I thought, one day, if I can afford to be here, I'm going to have a place here.
At 11 years old, you knew what you wanted.
It was that impressive to me, yes.
So you grew up with your stepfather then?
Well, we started out, my mom and my biological dad, he was a lifer in the Air Force. So he had been in the tail end of the Second World War, then Korea, then Vietnam. When I was a kid, I was born in the 60s, and I recall a very, very young memory of my dad coming out of the house, this house that we had moved to in La Puente, and he was wearing his uniform and I was on the front lawn and I was in a playpen and I was hanging onto the side of the playpen looking up, and he came out in his uniform with his jacket over his arm, leaned over, picked me up and kissed me goodbye. And I really have very little recollection of him living with us after that day that he left. It was not a long marriage to my mom, but his mother stayed back with us, his adopted or stepmother, and she helped my mom with my sister and I. I don't know when their divorce was final, but it happened in those very formative years of my life. Mm-hmm. I do remember about 5 or 6 years old, maybe I was six, someone had introduced my mom to another gentleman. He was a Belgian American. They fell hard and fast. I just remember from the moment I first set my eyes on him, there was a certain connection that I don't even know where it came from, but it felt like I finally had the dad I wanted, or just someone, a friend, because my biological father was very volatile. He had an extremely difficult temper. I didn't fear him so much because he never projected it at me, but it was in the atmosphere of my youth. So when my mom met Severin, this gentleman that she was fixed up with, I just thought he was just the coolest guy. There was just something that we connected on a higher level. And about a year later, we went to the airport to pick him up and he moved in with us. After that, they got married. I think I was seven. I was at the wedding. I guess it was 7 years, my first 7 years of life, that it was my mom, myself, my sister, and my grandma Theo.
With dad coming in and out.
Well, he had visitation or custody. So as long as he paid his child support, she would send us to visit him. And I recall at a certain point, I said, I don't want to go there.
Mm-hmm. So then your stepdad came in and he and your mother recreated the nuclear family for you and your sister.
Somewhat. He was a bit adrift. He had been married earlier in life. He had made some success earlier in life. And I guess the marriage and the success fell apart. So when he met my mom, he was kind of regrouping. So he actually was kind of, he was more the stay-at-home dad, and she was going to work. She worked at a travel agency in Beverly Hills with this very successful elder woman who really gave her love and support and just adored her. And so my mom was this like cute travel agent booking all these, you know, like travel for the Doors. There were rock and rollers that came through. There were artists and actors. And it was a Beverly Hills establishment.
Your mother's influence in your life is already so apparent. She had her foot in the door.
My mom loomed large. Still does. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that your home life influenced your religious perspective? Because that also is so much of being an American girl, like politics and religion. What did that side of your home life look like?
Well, it's interesting. And thank you for asking that question. My biological father was an Irish American. So I guess he was Catholic. However, when he married my mom, she came from a Sephardic Jewish family. And at the age of 30 something, he converted to Judaism. And I think it was all to please her and her family. I don't know how much he really embraced the religion. So I was raised as a Jewish girl, but I gotta say, and not hopefully nobody takes insult to this, but I was not raised very well religiously. It was more, this is Yom Kippur, so you don't eat. Well, why? To give thanks to God and make a sacrifice for all that you get from God. Okay. You know, on this holiday, we do this. Well, why is that? Because we do. That's just how it goes. In their defense, my mom and adopted dad, who was really non-religious, the adopted dad, they did try to send me to Sunday school, but I think they dropped me off and I'd jump on the bus and go down to the beach and come back just in time to get picked up at a later point in life. But no, there was no formal religious doctrine in our home. My mother was very conservative, religious Jew. So we did what she told us to do, but I'm definitely culturally Jewish because that was the predominant religion in the house. I am a person who believes in one God, and I really think the Ten Commandments are a good outline. I think try to avoid those seven deadly sins and just walk the line, you know, walk the line, stay within the walls of doing the right thing.
I'm sure you had a lot of thoughts. Do you feel like you had developed a political opinion?
Well, I think what happened to me, I was exposed to the whole Watergate situation, mm-hmm. Nixon. And when I was in, I think it was kindergarten or first grade, we had to watch the Watergate trials.
In class.
It was something that this teacher just thought would be beneficial. And so I kind of took to this political thing, this structure. And I feel I became very righteous in that this is America. This is what's going on in my country. I'm an American girl. I want to know what's going on. How could this guy lie and cheat, you know, the American people? So it's interesting that I got engaged with, you know, the political scenery around us and really knew that when I turned 18, there's no way I'm missing that first vote. Mm-hmm. And as my adopted father progressed in his success in the world of business, I remember by the time I turned 18, he said to me, it behooves you, benefits you, to vote Republican because our tax bracket, where we are now financially, it's a better tax situation if you vote Republican to benefit you and the future of your families. So I took him at his word and I voted for Reagan. And that was the first and last time that I ever voted Republican.
I think that you had the opportunity to grow with political influences in your home and religious influences in your home. And then your mother having this career in Beverly Hills of all places. How do you think her career choice influenced you?
I think that it was less of a career choice for her. It was more a means to pay the rent, buy us our clothes. Because when she left the military, Dad, my biological father, James Alfred Duchesne, she was out there going, okay, what am I going to do? How am I going to support these two daughters and a house? And, you know, she fortunately found this job. We had moved from La Puente and we're living in, you know, Los Angeles. I go to a elementary school called Carthay Center. I'm like one of the few white girls in a predominantly very ethnically diverse school. So my formative years from 5 years old until 10 were really cool. It was really cool. I had no problem. I love being in a culturally diverse environment. I think it's more exciting. It's more interesting. It was rich and there was, you know, different ethnicities and different foods and different lunches and different, you know, we'd have school dances. I mean, it was a great time. So yeah, when I go back to my childhood, it was a lot of fun. You know, there were a lot of fun moments. As far as my mom, she was very ambitious. Once she got to America, she was like, wow. I mean, open your eyes from a very poor Moroccan family in Casablanca to suddenly this new culture, this new land. I think she saw a lot of opportunity and she's smart and she's driven and she was going to make it step by step. So from La Puente to West LA, when she was working in Beverly Hills and we were living, you know, just barely, you know, in a roach infested, mm-hmm. I gotta say, a roach infested apartment. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's really interesting. I came from so little, but I never wanted for much. Mm-hmm. My mom did make sure that we had what we needed. And she then met this guy and they did, you know, that relationship was pretty toxic, their relationship, mm-hmm. but he was never toxic to me. In fact, I'd much rather hang out with my stepdad than my biological dad because just anything could set him off. And though it wasn't, you know, pointed at me Exactly. It was mm-hmm. there in the environment. Very scary. My sister and I, that was another toxic relationship. I just think she was very influenced by the goings on in the environment. And it really, she kind of picked up those habits and was a real tough sister to have.
It's a tough go. She had a tough position. You had probably even tougher position being under her as she's enduring her environment. But it is really cool that you were given the opportunity to experience the value of fatherhood through your stepfather. That experience is something that I think we're all worthy of knowing the value of fatherhood, whether it comes from our biological parents, a step-parent, a grandfather, a positive male role model. Then I'm really glad that you had the chance to experience that, because I see you here today and where you are, and I know that you're a mother of adult children, and you are a wife, a longtime wife in a successful marriage. And, you know, your stepfather, I'm sure, planted seeds for you.
Well, you know, he, at the end of the day, my stepdad was everything that a dad was supposed to be.
That's right.
In place of the dad that wasn't. And the dad that wasn't, you know, it's interesting. I don't have any animosity towards him. In fact, I feel very empathetic towards him. He mellowed as an older person. But I think all young ladies benefit from a positive, loving, supportive father. I think at least you've got to have one parent who really picks you up and dusts you off when you're down. And my mom was like that breeze that kind of pushed me along in the right direction. But she was just, you know, she was surviving. You know, she that marriage failed too. And there was a lot of animosity there, I guess. My dad was a philanderer, my adopted dad. I can't get to the root. That's their story.
Being a good dad doesn't always mean you're a good husband.
I think it's interesting because at the end of the day, he'd been married 7 times.
Wow.
By the end of his life in 2008, he had 7 marriages, 6 different women. He married one twice. So we say 7 marriages because there were 7 marriages.
Wow.
But he never, ever let go of his kids. He took care of us. When he met my mom, he had 2 kids in a prior marriage. We all came together eventually. So that's my stepsister and stepbrother, who I consider my brother and sister. And then he and my mom had my brother, Michael. So there's my half brother. The only disconnect there was my older sister, the one that is my 100% biological sister, and this stepfather, adopted father. They were oil and water.
Mm.
It did not work. And it was really disappointing for me because I was finally happy in a situation at our main home with my mom and her new husband.
Could you tell me where you found yourself in all of this? Your stepfather and your mother have now ended their marriage. You're coming into your adolescence or your young adulthood. Where are you here?
At this point, I am 15. Okay. And I'm in high school. My mom's on her own again. I'm with my mom. I'm with my sister. The grandma's now deceased. She died in, you know, 1974. Anyway, so I'm now with my mom, and her and my stepdad had purchased this home in Beverly Hills. So they went from the townhouse to a real house. They've now split. He's building his business. She's a real estate broker. She's, you know, kicking ass, like, you know, buying and selling and flipping. She's doing great. She's got this little boy, my brother, who's 11 years younger than me, my half brother, who is really my brother. I don't think of halves or steps or any of that. We all grew up so close. But anyway, so I'm in high school now and I'm having the time of my life. I have a lot of friends. I'm working summers for my dad and his watch company. And when I get to the point where I graduate high school, I felt my mom was ready to boot me out at 18. I just feel she had a younger child. She was a single mom. She's working real hard. And it's like, okay, time for you to move on and become an adult. My mom basically sold the house, said she downsized, bought a duplex, said there was only 2 bedrooms, one for her, one for my brother. And basically, boom, you got to figure it out. But I do want to say my mom was 21 when she had me. She was 19 when she had my sister. So I feel I had a pretty young mom, and just she always looked really young. She always looked really great, you know, money or not, she was beautiful. And so watching her just always moving forward, always taking a step in the right direction, always taking a step this way and then a step up and a step up and a step up, you know, she ascended the ladder. And so that demonstration was really good for me because it made me feel like I'm a precocious kid. I know what's going on. I would talk to people. I was confident. I just think I had whatever it is that you have to have. I had it at that time, and I called my dad Severin. I said, "Dad, I don't know what I'm going to do." And he said, "Well, go find a job in Beverly Hills. See if you can work for a jewelry store or, you know, clothing store." So I went, and my first job was being a stock girl in a retail boutique in Beverly Hills called Allen Austin. It was very, very elegant. I was exposed to a lot of very glamorous women. I learned how to wrap presents, and I learned how to take inventory, and that was my first job. And then my second job was working for a jewelry store that I landed in Beverly Hills, and that was great. Actually, this was while I was still in high school. So when I graduated high school and felt this urge or desire for my mom to help me move on, I went to work for my dad, full-time, hardcore, from the bottom, starting at the bottom, and worked my way up to become a national sales manager, which was really awesome because I had commission and I got bonuses. And it just so happened that I was working for my dad. My dad became very successful. I became successful along with the company. And during that time, as life is evolving, you know, I'm dating, and one time I'm in New York, and that's where I meet my husband. We met, and a year later, we were married. Literally, like, we met, 1 month later we were engaged, a year later we were married, and we've been together since 1987.
Wow, incredible. And who is that husband of yours? I want to know more.
My husband is an upright bassist from a band called Stray Cats. Stray Cats were really on the forefront in the early 80s of the MTV, you know, extravaganza, and they are just a really super cool Americana rockabilly rock and roll band. He is, I'd say, one of the most legendary upright bassists of that genre, and just he's just badass. But by the time I was 16, I was working for my dad part-time. By the time I was 18, I'm fully working for my dad. So at 18, I go to New York to do one of the jewelry shows because this is a watch business and we do these big trade shows. Fast forward, I'm in New York on business. Years later, I'm going there to meet with my accounts because the Gucci boutique on Fifth Avenue was one of my accounts. I'm going to corporate in New Jersey. The timepiece company was my dad's invention, and it was a timepiece company for the House of Gucci. Back in California, I'm living with this lady who needed a roommate. So I said, "Hey, I'll be your roommate." At some party, we were together with friends, and we had mutual friends. And she said, "I need a roommate." And I said, "I need a roommate." So we got an apartment in LA. Park La Brea was the community. And this woman, she was the daughter of the late actor Peter Sellers. Anyway, Victoria and I get an apartment together. I've got business in New York. I have this like part-time boyfriend in New York. He takes me out to the VIP room in a nightclub. So we go to the private room in a nightclub in New York. We walk in and he says to me, "Hey, oh my God, that's Lee Rocker from the Stray Cats." And I'm like, "Oh, the Stray Cats?" I said, "You know, my roommate's mom, Britt Eklund, is married to one of the guys in the Stray Cats. I can introduce you to him." Victoria's mother was this bombshell. She was a, you know, sex symbol in the 60s, I guess 70s. She had been married to Peter Sellers. She was a James Bond girl. And she was now married to the drummer of the Stray Cats, Slim Jim Phantom, who I believe was like 20 years younger than her. So Victoria's mom was married to a guy that was our generation, Anyway, so Lee's sitting down, smoking a cigarette, looking like a rock star at this hip nightclub at the time.
I mean, you're 22, 23, 24 years old. You're in the prime of
At this point, I'm 23. So I walk up to Lee and I tap him on the shoulder and he kind of looks up and he goes, yeah. And I say, hi, your best friend is my best friend's stepdad. And within seconds, he says, oh, how's Victoria doing? Send her my love. And I'm like, she's doing great. I said, actually, it's this boyfriend of mine that wanted to meet you. So I introduce him to the boyfriend. And the boyfriend at the time is like, oh, you should call Deb. Are you still living in LA? And Lee's like, yeah, I still live in LA, but I'm going to move back to New York. He goes, call Deb. She knows all the cute girls, goes to all the parties. And I'm thinking to myself, that's great. He's the rock star here, but okay. You know, and the boyfriend gave Lee my phone number. I literally still have the matchbook with his handwriting, with my name and phone number that he gave to Lee. It's a Limelight matchbook.
You still have it.
I do. And so when I went back to LA, I got back to my apartment and I get a phone call and it's Lee. And I say, hang on. I look at Victoria. I said, why did you never introduce me to this guy? He's awesome. So I was on the phone with him. He asked if we could get together. I said, you know what? I'm going to two parties tonight. One is a family party. And the one after that, you may know some people at. It's kind of a, you know, real Hollywood party with like photographers and videographers and producers and models and actresses. He picks me up. This is our first date, but I'm still dating this guy in New York. So I'm telling him this is just a friendly outing. And so we went to this party and literally the first party was a family party. He met my whole family in one go. And then we went to the next party and he knew everyone there. And I thought, this guy's cool. So ultimately, we did start dating. He did live in LA and the other guy lived in New York. And it just was obviously a higher level connection between Lee and I than I had ever experienced in my life.
At this point, you've clearly fallen in love with Lee. You're 26 and you have his child. You went on to have another child.
Our daughter.
Your daughter, who I know is a brilliant artist. And
she really is.
As far as I understand, your kids are incredible and they've been influenced by the two of you. They're both adults, fully grown, married, happy. You know, we've touched so much on your childhood and your development into your young adulthood, becoming a wife and then quickly becoming a mother. And I'd love to know, now that you are in this lifestyle with Lee, who is a Hall of Fame stand-up bassist, how did you navigate that space in new motherhood?
Well, again, thank you to my dad, Severin. He and my mom had divorced many years earlier, and he stayed around Beverly Hills when they first separated, and then he moved to Laguna Beach. And so he introduced me to Laguna Beach and I don't know, 16, 17 years old. And I just thought it was a really beautiful place. When I got married and he just adored, he's gone now, but passed away in 2008, but adored my husband. He said, why don't you guys get closer to me? You're going to have a baby and raising kids in LA. And, you know, I guess he was reflecting on how wild my sister and I got to be in LA because, you know, we were sneaking out. We were going to nightclubs too young. We were, you know, it's a lot of exposure there. So he thought it was a little bit more of a wholesome environment down here for raising kids and keeping a marriage together, just less distractions. So being that my husband was a musician, is a musician and travels for work, it didn't matter where his home base was because he'd have to get up and get on a tour bus or get on a plane or, you know, get going from wherever he was. So we moved to Laguna Beach. We immersed ourselves in the community. We got involved with the school power. We got involved with volunteering at the school. Even Lee would come in if, you know, there was a time our daughter was like little school president and Lee came in and did a little concert for her and for her class. And so we built a community around us right here in this geographical environment. And it really worked out. Mm-hmm. And as far as traveling, you know, I met the right partner. I met someone who was always on tour. So that afforded me the opportunity to travel a lot, especially when the kids were little because they weren't in school, so I could take them everywhere. When they got into school, it was more restrictive, so I couldn't, you know, go on every tour or every whatever, which is probably better for the marriage.
But you were able to have your, what was the difference between your kids, the age difference?
2 years.
2 years. So you were able to have your toddlers backstage.
Oh, it was,
at some of the most cool stages around the country.
And world.
And the world.
Yeah, they really.
What was it like having toddlers backstage compared to what it was like, you know, prior to being a mother back there?
Well, the partying went down and the seriousness came up. We would, you know, I think our son went to Japan when he was 10 months old. That was hard, you know, because a 10 month old trying to find the right food and just keeping him comfortable. And the guys were so busy touring, but we just pretty much just, you know, put them in a backpack and brought them along and they adapted. Our daughter, she was a little sponge, you know. She took everything in and she noticed the art and she noticed the colors and she noticed the embellishments on clothes. She was very aesthetic. So it's not a surprise that she became this artist. Fortunately, she had the talent innately. Honestly, she would make figures and art on a fogged window in the car, and it was phenomenal. And our son benefited from travel as well, though he was always a guy who was really thrilled with history. So he's very politically alert. And if you want to talk about politics, I think if you've traveled the world and you've experienced many cultures, it's really hard to be narrow-minded. And I'm not trying to insult anybody of a different party affiliation. I am a proud Democrat. You can call me a libtard. You can call me a liberal. You can call me a progressive. I feel I'm a progressive because I feel that progress is something that needs to come as we move forward. And so today, all of that travel and all of my work and all the exposure to various, you know, ethnicities and cultures makes me, I think, a richer person in my soul. I am of the belief that we are all God's children and we all deserve dignity and respect. But I think that if someone's attacked, they have the right to respond. I wish I could say I was a peaceful warrior and could turn the other cheek and be more Buddha-like, but it's very difficult for me.
A lot of people wish they would be able to not feel. It's a challenge.
I think it's a beautiful thing to be able to forgive. I think it's beautiful. And I sometimes let my tongue get ahead of me and then I regret it, because I know I'm better than that. So I think it's really important to have self-discipline, but I think a very important word to know is sorry. Mm-hmm. To be sorry is very important.
To be able to lay the ego down as an individual is very important. And that is saying, I'm sorry, like setting your ego aside and being vulnerable as an individual is so challenging for a lot of people. And from what I know about you, I think that is your perspective in politics, is do what's right, forgive when you're wronged, do what's right and keep pushing, because people need people.
Well, I'm a big believer in democracy and I am a big believer, as I said, in live and let live. And I think if you're walking within the confines of what is right, you're not physically hurting anyone. You're not stealing from anyone. You're walking down that straight and narrow path. I think if we could all just find our lane, we all have, I believe anyway, that we all have the same objective. We all want to get to that higher place. We all want to get to the next level. And we all have a different road that we're taking. But just because your road is windy and mine is straight, that's no reason for me to judge you or dislike you.
That's right.
If you're a shitty person and you just, you're just an ogre.
You're going to have to go.
You know, and maybe it's a female thing, and I hate to sound that way, but if you think about it, women don't wage wars. Maybe it's that we're not in, you know, we're not driving the ship at this juncture, but, you know, we, especially as moms, we consider the ramifications on the next generation, on the children, on the future. And I still hold hope that love is stronger than hate. It takes a lot more energy to hate.
It does.
It takes so much out of you to be in a toxic environment, whether it be, you know, personal toxic environment or like the way our country has been lately. It's been toxic and we're very divided. And how can we set examples or lead the charge here if we don't get our shit together?
How can we lead the charge, or how can we come together if we don't know each other? Which is a really cool piece to what you're doing here, is you're helping us connect and you're helping us get to know one another.
The whole point of me starting a podcast was not, oh, I want to be popular. I want to be famous. I've seen so many people in my world of music and just community, you know, starting podcasts, which is, it's a really cool thing. It's the Wild West in a way. It's still, it's not new, but it's new-ish. And it's a format that people feel they have an outlet to express whatever it is they want to express. For me, it was that I have a work ethic and I had a fashion brand and it was fabulous. And I closed the fashion brand, worked on my daughter's wedding. And after my daughter, our second child, was married, I thought, what am I going to do now? And I was so immersed during the COVID lockdown on the news and the social media, you know, and I just got depressed like so many of us did during the pandemic. I mean, the division that was going on and the election and the claims of fraud and the big lie and the big steal and then people storming the Capitol. I was aghast. I just couldn't believe it. I saw so much animosity and I got drawn in debating with people on the internet. You know, just stupid stuff. And I decided, you know what? There's a higher calling for me here. This isn't it. Mm-hmm. Spouting nonsense off on the internet, it doesn't mean anything, doesn't amount to anything, at least for me. So I thought, I want to hear people's stories. I want to know why you love baseball. I love baseball. We both take a great hot dog, but we're so divided in so many other ways. Your faith is more powerful than my faith. Well, who said so? So you mean one is right and everybody else is wrong? And I thought, you know, let's expose people's stories here on this platform. And I'd love to hear from more from the right. I love the left, the center, no party at all. I want to hear from lots of people because this country is made up of lots of people. And I just felt like, wow, you know what? I love to listen. This is interesting that I'm sharing my story because I'm more a listener than a, I guess I'm a sharer, but I'm generally.
You're an incredible conversationalist, but I do appreciate your listening ear and your curiosity is unmatched. Not only your curiosity, but your intention to understand.
Thank you.
Your mission here is to hear and comprehend and listen so that you can help America get to know itself again.
To me, it's about exposing the beauty in all of us, regardless our political or religious affiliation. This is a soul connection. This is to connect people in the deepest parts of their DNA. It's not what we were told to believe in. It's not what we're seeing on the news. This is about human connection.
We are the people, and we are the state of America today.
Well, thank you for honoring us with your time and your story.
It's more than a pleasure. I'm very, very excited to see what comes of this. And I'm really looking forward to season 3. So thank you, Debra, for attending your show and allowing me the opportunity to sit on this end of the mic. I can't tell you what a pleasure it's been. I hope you continue to do great work.
Well, thank you so much, Rachel Cooks.
This episode of Debra Craddock was hosted by me, Debra Drucker. It was produced by Lee Rocker with co-production and editing by Gideon Brower. Our amazing music was performed by Amy Nelson and Kathy Guthrie of Folk Uke. Be sure to rate and review this episode wherever you listen to podcasts. For more Debra Craddock, check out debracraddock.com and our Instagram at Debra Craddock. That's D-E-B-O-R-A-H Craddock, like Democratic. Until next time. Political is